control of their destiny as regional bureaucrats from corrupt political systems decide our future. Sound incredible? Check out the facts for yourself. Go to stoptheftaa.org. Then tell Congress you want a better future for America. That's stoptheftaa.org.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70, and worldwide on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Roll away the dawn, roll away the dawn, and let me see the land of the free. Anything changed at home? Sweet liberty, sweet liberty is in our hands. It's part of the plan, or is it a state of mind? Never forget.
You're listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. It is Tuesday, and it is the 14th of June in the year 2005. And it's we're alone tonight, you and I. We have no guests this evening. I'm going to begin here with our spiritual message. This is from the book that Steve Olson sent me after he visited here several weeks back. It's titled, What God is Like, and these are poems. This is titled, Oneness. Out on a cape where sea and land are almost one, I like to stand. There, boundaries become unfixed, sea, earth, and I all intermixed. Or sometimes, I'm swept along a crowded street, one with the throng, and losing consciousness of me, feel only my humanity. Or in the silence of a prayer, I find God's presence everywhere. My heart dissolves in God's one heart. Where does God end? Where do I start? I like that. And Stephen, thank you for this book. It's very lovely. He wrote a poem to me. I'm not going to read it to you in the front of the book. Anyway, here's what we're going to do tonight, folks. I've been working on chapters 16 and 17 of the book Jewish Persecution. And I've been, maybe it's been pulling and pushing at me to get it done. And it's interesting because I've been being contacted by people asking, when is it going to get finished? Where is chapter 16? Well, actually, chapter 16 has become 16 and 17. So we'll have to change the numbers on the website. And, of course, asking if the book is going to be published. I don't know if it is or not. I just don't know. But the reason that 16 was left undone is because, for those of you who've read the book, chapters 14 and 15, after we finished excerpting from the Talmud, I got into the Noahide laws, and right about that time, Carol Valentine had done a full report on the Noahide laws. It's chilling. If you haven't read the book, Jewish Persecution, it's online at our website, at sweetliberty.org, right there on the main page. And I think you would like to read it. Folks. I don't know if you're hearing the beeping going on in the background. Something's going on with that doggone printer of mine ever since we had that storm. We'll just ignore it. Anyway, I'm going to start here with chapter 16 and just begin reading. I don't have to explain anymore. I had excerpted actually wound up transcribing most of her report on the Noahide laws. And I said here, beginning with chapter 16, while excerpting from, I'm reading this to you tonight, by the way, that's what we're doing tonight, while excerpting from Mrs. Valentine's report on the Noahide laws in the previous chapter, I deleted a short section because it left me wondering and wanting more information. We'll begin this chapter with that deleted passage and follow with further evidence of the connection between Freemasonry, Talmudism, and the Noahide laws. Mrs. Valentine wrote, "Freemasons are Noahides." She said the entry, Noahide, found in the Encyclopedia of Freemasonry, it's the Encyclopedia of Freemasonry and its Kindred Sciences, etc., by Albert Mackey. This was published in 1917. This is what it says. The descendants of Noah, under Noahide, this is the definition, the descendants of Noah, a term applied to Freemasons on the theory derived from the, quote, legend of the craft, that Noah was the father and founder of the Masonic system of theology, and hence the Freemasons claim to be his descendants, because in times past they preserved the pure principles of his religion, Noah's religion. And the pure principles of his religion amid the corruptions of surrounding faiths. And she said, so in their own words, Freemasons declare themselves to be Noahites. Now, in the Jewish websites that we quoted from in the previous chapters, a Noahite is a Gentile. And their intention is that we all become Noahites. They refer to non-Jews as Hasidic Gentiles. So we see in that statement that there's nothing Christian about Freemasonry, is there, folks, despite what those in the lesser degrees of the craft claim or believe. Upon visiting the Freemasons tracing board site, listen to this. It says Freemasonry is indeed the resurrection of the Noahide religion, that of the patriarch Noah, that religion prior to any dogma, which allows us to go beyond the differences and oppositions of the various faiths. And then in brackets it says, as quoted on the site of the Grand Lodge of France. As quoted on the site of the Grand Lodge of France, Freemasonry is indeed the resurrection of the Noahide religion, that of the patriarch Noah, that religion prior to any dogma, which allows us to go beyond the differences and oppositions of the various faiths. That religion prior to any dogma. Recall that the Noahide laws appear nowhere in the Jews' section of the, quote, Holy Christian Bible, in other words, in the Old Testament. There's nothing about the Noahide laws in there, and nor are they to be found anywhere in the New Testament. The Noahide laws came from the pens of the scribes and Pharisees right out of the Babylonian Talmud, folks, and that is addressed in the previous chapters before this chapter 16. What did the protocols 100 years ago say about Freemasonry? All right, now listen up. First, we'll begin with protocol number 4. Who and what is in a position to overthrow an invisible force? And this is precisely what our force is. Gentile masonry blindly serves as a screen for us and our objects, but the plan of action of our force, even its very abiding place, remains for the whole people an unknown mystery. Protocol number 4. Gentile masonry blindly serves as a screen for us and our objects. And then from protocol number 9, the words of the liberal which are in effect the words of our Masonic watchword, namely, liberty, equality, fraternity, will, when we come into our kingdom, be charged by us, changed by us, into words no longer of a watchword, but only an expression of idealism, namely, the right of liberty, the duty of equality, the ideal of brotherhood. Liberty, equality, fraternity, or brotherhood. Now, remember these words from protocol number one. This is a restatement from previously in the book. Far back in ancient times, they say, we were the first to cry among the masses of the people the words liberty, equality, fraternity, words many times repeated since those days by stupid poll parrots who from all sides round flew down upon these baits and with them carried away the well-being of the world, true freedom of the individual, formerly so well guarded against the pressure of the mob. You want to hear that one again? Far back in ancient times, we were the first to cry among the masses of the people the words liberty, equality, fraternity, words many times repeated since those days by stupid poll parrots who from all sides round flew down upon these baits, the bait, it was bait, and with them carried away the well-being of the world, true freedom of the individual, formerly so well guarded against the pressure of the mob. And then the next protocol passage follows a discussion of the, quote, new constitution, which they intend to promulgate. It appears the time for that is rapidly approaching. Folks, you know, maybe something I ought to put in here. Many of you, probably know about this, the Constitution for the New States of America. It's on our website at sweetliberty.org, and it's in the section on the Constitutional Convention. That was done back in the, I think in the 60s, I'm not sure. I can't recall right now, but it was funded by the Rockefellers and the Carnegie Foundation, either the Carnegie or Ford Foundation, and they had a group of people, and it took them 10 years, and I forget how many drafts, something like 40 drafts before they got what they wanted. It is spine-chilling. The Constitution for the New States of America. $25 million they spent 10 years and 40 drafts to get the Constitution they wanted. Now, what do you think is going to happen when they have embraced into our borders Canada and Mexico? Think they're going to think the Bill of Rights will it continue to exist? If you haven't seen it, if you haven't read it, you might want to go and do that. Anyway, let me go back here to chapter 16. The next protocol passage follows a discussion of the new constitution which they intend to promulgate. It appears the time for that is rapidly approaching. The Free Trade Agreement of the Americas has recently been announced in Canada and the UK as a done deal. We've talked about that, haven't we? The FTAA intends to merge Canada, the U.S. and Mexico, eventually the entire North and South American continents, into one union of the Americas, as in the European Union. And it is certain that those nations will not adopt the Constitution for the U.S. of A., with the damnable, at least in their eyes, first 10 Articles of Amendment known as our Bill of Rights. Now, let's turn to Protocol number 11. They said, for what purpose, then, have we invented this whole policy and insinuated it into the minds of the goys without giving them any chance to examine its underlying meaning? For what, indeed, if not in order to obtain in a roundabout way what is, for our scattered tribe, unattainable by the direct road? It is this which has served as the basis for our organization of secret masonry, which is not known to, and aims which are not even so much as suspected by, those goy cattle attracted by us into the show army of Masonic lodges in order to throw dust in the eyes of their fellows. That's end quoting from protocol number 11. So the creatures realize that many so-called Christians will join their show Masonic lodges in order to gain financial superiority, position, power, and influence over. In other words, throw dust in the eyes of their fellow man. They've had hundreds of centuries to study and understand human nature, and their desire to win souls has been greatly satisfied, particularly in the political arena, where local, state, and federal officials dance to the destructive tune of their masters, not to mention their puppets in the myriad bureaucracies created by officials in the various levels of government. In protocol number one, back to protocol number one, they assert that, quote, men with bad instincts, listen to this, folks, think they don't know human nature? Men with bad instincts are more in number than the good, and therefore the best results in governing them are attained by violence and terrorization and not by academic discussions. Every man aims at power. Everyone would like to become a dictator if only he could. And rare indeed are the men who would not be willing to sacrifice the welfare of all for the sake of securing their own welfare. Here's more on Freemasonry from protocol number 15. If you happen to tune in late, you're listening to Sweet Liberty, and what I'm doing is reading from chapter 16 of the book in progress titled Jewish Persecution, and it's on our website at sweetliberty.org. I haven't sent these over to Darren yet, folks. Every kind of what we're doing here in 16 and 17 is showing the connections here. From protocol number 15, it says, every kind of new institution of anything like a secret society will also be punished with death. Those of them which are now in existence are known to us, serve us, and have served us. We shall disband and send into exile. In this way, we shall proceed with those goy masons who know too much. Such of these as we may for some reason spare will be kept in constant fear of exile. We shall promulgate a law making all former members of secret societies liable to exile. You know, if you know any people, if you know anybody who's in that society, they really should be warned, don't you think? Okay, further into protocol number 15. And this is a fairly lengthy diatribe here. They're saying, quote, meantime, however, until we come into our kingdom, we shall act in the contrary way. We shall create and multiply Freemasonic lodges in all the countries of the world, absorb into them all who may become or who are permanent in public activity. For in these lodges, we shall find our principal intelligence officer and means of influence. You get it? All these lodges, this is still quoting, we shall bring under one central administration known to us alone and to all others absolutely unknown, which will be composed of our learned elders. The lodges will have their representatives who will serve to screen the above-mentioned administration of Masonry and from whom will issue the watchword and program. In these lodges, we shall tie together the knot which binds together all revolutionary and liberal elements. We shall tie together the knot which binds together all revolutionary and liberal elements, Their composition will be made up of all strata of society. The most secret political plots will be known to us and will fall under our guiding hands on the very day of their conception. Among the members of these lodges will be almost all the agents. Listen to this, folks. Among the members of these lodges will be almost all the agents of international and national police. International and national police, since their service is for us irreplaceable in the respect that the police is in a position not only to use its own particular measure with the insubordinate, but also to screen our activities and provide pretexts for discontents, etc. And that's end quoting from that particular passage from the protocols. We hope any Freemasons reading this will pay close attention to the continuation of this particular dialogue in order to see the utter contempt in which you are held by the elite, and most particularly how you have become their useful idiots. It's never too late to make amends. Not merely is physical life at stake here, souls are at stake here. Likewise, any non-Freemason bureaucrat or elected official who has, whether knowingly or through negligence, naivete, or willful ignorance, played a part in this evil should read carefully and make a choice now for the sake of your soul. We're continuing here, and this is out of protocol number 15. This is what it says. It says, the class of people who most willingly enter into secret societies are those who live by their wits, careerists, and in general people most light-minded, men who we shall have no difficulty in dealing and in using to wind up the mechanism of the machine devised by us. I might have left a word out of here. Let me read that again. The class of people who most willingly enter into secret societies are those who live by their wits, careerists, and in general, people most light-minded, and with whom we shall have no difficulty in dealing. Okay, with whom we shall have no difficulty in dealing and in using to wind up the mechanism of the machine devised by us. Utter contempt is exactly what they have for those who enter into what they call their show Freemasonry, folks. And if you're a Freemason listening, you should listen up. And we're continuing here. Protocol number 15. If this world grows agitated, the meaning of that will be that we have had to stir it up in order to break up its too great solidarity. But if there should arise in its midst a plot, then at the head of that plot will be no other than one of our most trusted servants. It is natural that we and no other should lead Masonic activities, for we know whither we are leading. We know the final goal of every form of activity, whereas the Goyim have knowledge of nothing, not even of the immediate effect of action. They put before themselves usually the monetary reckoning of the satisfaction of their self-opinion in the accomplishment of their thought, without even remarking that the very conception never belonged to their initiative, but to our instigation of their thought. We put the thoughts in their minds, and they act as though it's their own idea, is what they're saying here. The Goyim enter the lodges out of curiosity, or in the hope of their means to get a nibble at the public pie, and some of them in order to obtain a hearing before the public for their impracticable and groundless fantasies. They thirst for the emotion of success and applause, of which we are remarkably generous. Stroke, stroke, stroke. That reminds me of Wilson, Woodrow Wilson. They said one of the reasons that he was chosen to be president was that he was such an egotist, and that they stroked him and gave him lots of perks, and he was total clay in their hands. Woodrow Wilson. Or was his name Wolfson? It said that his name was Wolfson anyway. Let's go on here. This is still quoting from protocol number 15. They say, it says, the reason we give them this success is to make use of the high conceit of themselves to which it gives birth, for that insensibly disposes them to assimilate our suggestions without being on their guard against them in the fullness of their confidence that is their own infallibility, which is giving utterance to their own thoughts, and that it is impossible for them to borrow those of others. Once again, what they're saying is that we give them the thoughts, the suggestions, the ideas, and they're so full of conceit that they pretend it's their idea. You cannot, and quoting again here, you cannot imagine to what extent the wisest of the goyim can be brought to a state of unconscious naivete in the presence of this condition of high conceit of themselves, and at the same time, how easy it is to take the heart out of them by the slightest ill success, though it be nothing more than the stoppage of the applause they had, and to reduce them to a slavish submission for the sake of winning a renewal of success. By so much as ours disregard success, if only they can carry through their plans, by so much the goyim are willing to sacrifice any plans only to have success. Now, that's a little convoluted. It sounds a little convoluted when you're reading it or hearing it. I had to read it a couple times. What it says is that ours disregard success in favor of bringing a plan to fruition, but the goyim are willing to sacrifice any plans just to have their own little personal success. And then it says, it goes on, if we have been able to bring them to such a pitch of stupid blindness, is it not a proof, and an amazing clear proof, of the degree to which the mind of the goyim is undeveloped in comparison with our mind? That is, that it is mainly, which guarantees our success. Death is the inevitable, these are excerpts from, still, from 15. Death is the inevitable end for all. It is better to bring that end nearer to those who hinder our affairs than to ourselves, to the founders of this affair. We execute Masons in such ways that none save the Brotherhood can ever have a suspicion of it, not even the victims themselves, of our death sentence. They all die when required, as if from a normal kind of illness. I think you better hear that one again. It sounds like I'm hearing breathing in my telephone. It sounds weird. I wonder if our listeners are listening, our telephone listeners. I wonder if they're listening live and they don't have their mute button on or something. Anybody listening who's a Freemason should really be listening closely to this. Okay, I'm going to read that last one again. Death is the inevitable end for all. It is better to bring that end nearer to those who hinder our affairs than to ourselves, to the founders of this affair. We execute Masons in such ways that none save the Brotherhood can ever have a suspicion of it, not even the victims themselves, of our death sentence. They all die when required, as if from a normal kind of illness. That was written 100 years ago, folks. 100 years ago, 1906, I believe, is when this thing was, what do they call, in the British Museum. And the Jews say that it's a, counterfeit. Well, what is it a counterfeit of? A counterfeit, isn't that something copying something that's real? I won't get into that. We're at the half-hour break here. My goodness. I wish you'd get your pen in your hand. And for those of you who aren't part of the broadcast, you are invited to become part of it. because the broadcast only continues because of you, our listeners. It is a listener-sponsored broadcast. So you stay here and get your pen in your hand and write my address down, and I'll be back with you in about a minute and a half.
You're listening to the FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for only $45 a month, and you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. Or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $25, or any single program on tape, MP3 CD, or CD for only $15. You may do all of this online at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Just follow the instructions to make a donation or subscribe. Don't do internet? Then call 559-781-3773 and we'll be honored to help you. Thank you from all of us here at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Be sure to visit the SweetLiberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Okay, we're going to pick this up. And we're still quoting from Protocols number 15. It says here, they said, knowing this, okay, let me just read the last part of that one, that we execute Masons in such ways that none save the Brotherhood can ever have a suspicion of it, not even the victims themselves, of our death sentence. They all die when required, as if from a normal kind of illness. Knowing this, even the Brotherhood in its turn dare not protest. By such methods, we have plucked out of the midst of Masonry the very root of protest against our disposition. While preaching liberalism to the goyim, we at the same time keep our own people and our agents in a state of unquestioning submission. And then, that's end quoting that. And then I say here, my comment, the following portion addresses their control over legislation, laws passed by their manipulation, as well as their control of the judicial system, and is relevant enough to relate here, i.e., quote, the prestige of the law has been exploded. Now, I want you to listen to this and remember what's happening in the courts today, folks. They are making laws. They are legislating from the benches. And this was written 100 years ago. It was published 100 years ago. Okay? This was planned much further back than that. It looks, though, like about every 100 years they sit down and take a peek at how they're doing and then plan out for the next 100, the details. Because the plan itself, the overall plan, that was laid millennia ago. But the details have to be worked out each century. That's the way it appears to me. They say the prestige of the law has been exploded by the liberal interpretations introduced into this sphere. In the most important and fundamental affairs and questions, judges decide as we dictate to them. They see matters in the light wherewith we enfold them for the administration of the goyim, of course, through persons who are our tools, though we do not appear to have anything in common with them. Even senators and the higher administration accept our counsels. The purely brute mind, brute, like a beast, the purely brute mind of the goyim is incapable of use for analysis and observation, and still more, for the foreseeing whether a certain manner of setting a question may tend. In this difference in capacity for thought between the goyim and ourselves may be clearly discerned the seal, listen, the seal of our position on the chosen people and of our higher quality of humanness in contradistinction to the brute mind of the goyim. Their eyes are open, but they see nothing before them and do not invent, unless perhaps material things. From this it is plain that nature herself has destined us to guide and rule the world. I wish I would have started this on a Monday so we could have done it, because I can see that it's not going to get done here tonight or probably tomorrow night. A quote by Albert Pike, that's end quoting from the protocols at that point. A quote by Albert Pike from our preface in the book is well worth repeating here, reminding us that Freemasonry does indeed contain the, quote, show lodges mentioned in protocol number 11, and its members obviously have a specific role to play. This is Albert Pike. The blue degrees are but the outer court or portico of the temple. Part of the symbols are displayed there to the initiate, but he is intentionally misled by false interpretations. It is not intended. It is not intended that he shall understand them, but it is intended that he shall imagine he understands them. Listen, part of the symbols are displayed there to the initiate, but he is intentionally misled by false interpretations. It is not intended that he shall understand them, but it is intended that he shall imagine he understands them. Their true explication is reserved for the adepts, the princes of Masonry. There must always be a commonplace interpretation for the mass of initiates of the symbols that are eloquent to the adepts. That's from Morals and Dogma, page 819, folks. Albert Pike. Now let us finish the passage in protocol number 11 for the sake of completion here. In quote, God has granted to us, his chosen people, the gift of the dispersion. And in this, which appears in all eyes to be our weakness, has come forth all our strength, which has now brought us to the threshold of sovereignty over all the world. There now remains not much more for us to build up upon the foundation we have laid. It's raining here, and I've got to go shut a window. I can hear it. Folks, just don't go away, okay? It'll only take me about 20 seconds. Hold on. Oh boy, am I ever glad I got the lawn mowed today. It just barely dries out enough to get it mowed, but at least it happened. All right. I have to find my place here again. Oh, morals and dogma. Okay. Okay, I'm going to do this again. God has granted us, to us, his chosen people, the gift of the dispersion. And in this, which appears in all eyes to be our weakness, has come forth all our strength, which has now brought us to the threshold of sovereignty over all the world. There now remains not much more for us to build up upon the foundation we have laid. That's end quoting. That was out of protocol number 11. And I said, I believe that the lesser brethren of these vile creatures who call themselves God's chosen people are not included in the elite group and are considered nothing more by them than useful idiots to be used as pawns in the game. They've been moved around the world at the behest of the elite, just as the pawns are set up before the bishops and the knights and the queen on king and queen on the game board. We will provide evidence of the truth of this assertion in depth later. Okay, now we're going to excerpt from two chapters from the book titled The Cause of World Unrest. The American edition was published in New York, September 20th, 1920, with an introduction and preface by H.A. Gwynn, who was then editor of the Morning Post of London, and the name of the actual author was not mentioned, although it is evident that he is from Europe at least, and most probably England. And by the way, Sons of Liberty has this book, and I don't have their phone number at hand, but you can go into the resources section at sweetliberty.org. It's in the left-hand sidebar where it says resources, and if you go all the way down to the bottom, you will find how to contact Sons of Liberty. We get a lot of people going into that resources section, by the way. It's interesting to see the stats. As you read the following chapters, you'll undoubtedly notice that the author plays devil's advocate in determining whether Freemasonry is or is not controlled by the Elders of Zion, of which they themselves boast. We'll begin by excerpting the last three paragraphs of Chapter 2, which discusses the French Revolution. It says, quote, "The Jacobins were not only initiates themselves, but ruled their affairs in ghastly imitation of the Masonic order. Barul," that would be Abbe Barul, says, quote, "It is not by chance that the Jacobin clubs, both in Paris and the provinces, become the general receptacle for the Rosicrucians, Knights Templars, Knights of the Sun, and Knights Kadash." Kadash, I want you to remember that one, okay, folks? "Or of those in particular who, under the name of Philolethes," I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, "were enthusiastically wedded to the mysteries of Swedenborg, whether at Paris, Lyons, Avignon, Bordeaux, or Grenoble." This list is public, and it contains the names of all the profound adepts who had hitherto been dispersed among the lodges. That's from Abbe Barul's Volume 4, page 382. And then the author here, Cause of World Unrest, says, "Were they the real plotters of the revolution, or were they two puppets who danced obediently to the guidance of an unseen hand? Their fate suggests their role, for all or nearly all of them died under the guillotine, carrying with them their dark secrets to be buried forever in the quicklime of the general fosse." Now we're beginning Chapter 3, Cause of World Unrest. "It is now evident that the revolutionaries worked under the cloak of Freemasonry for the downfall of France. We are therefore driven to consider more closely the nature, not indeed of Freemasonry in the English sense, but of those orders of Freemasonry which in various parts of the world are generally associated with political propaganda. It is commonly supposed, and in our own country and the U.S., there is sufficient ground for the supposition that Masonic ritual consists of certain innocent and friendly, though symbolic, ceremonies which aim at strengthening strengthening the noble duties of charity, fraternity, loyalty, and fair dealing among men who are true citizens of their empire and wholehearted believers in Christian morality. Says the old English charge to initiates, you have to listen to this now, to so high an eminence has the credit of Freemasonry been advanced that in every age monarchs themselves have been promoters of the art, have not thought it derogatory from their dignity to exchange the scepter for the trowel, have patronized our mysteries and joined in our assemblies, end quote. In 1799 and 1817, the British House of Commons, in specific acts, reorganized the laudable character of the craft and provided for its continuance. So far, well. The history of Freemasonry, however, though it may start in England with the three orders or degrees of entered apprentice, fellow craft, and master, by no means ends there. And in the veiled accounts of certain continental lodges, we come upon forms of ritual and upon dark sayings that are not only foreign to the atmosphere of the Mother Grand Lodge, but that point to underlying motives which, if they bear any real significance, are significant of evil. Whether or not the successive degrees in revolutionary masonry constitute a hierarchy, each receiving its orders from the degree immediately above, or are mainly independent societies, it is difficult to say. But it is noteworthy that the higher the degree, the more mysterious and disquieting appear its ceremonies. There are at least 33 separate degrees, each with a peculiar ritual of its own, based on the alleged history of the order, and each conducting its observances and deliberations with the utmost secrecy. In the lower orders, the initiates into the secrets of revolutionary masonry, the initiate into the secrets of revolutionary masonry is allowed to hear the words liberty and equality only occasionally, but when his ears have grown familiar with them, and after he's learned how to be silent, he is raised to the grade of master. It is then that he hears for the first time of a founder whose murder has to be revenged. The succeeding grades, especially those from the ninth upwards, so accustom him to the idea of vengeance that it finally becomes habitual. Every master mason is entrusted with a twofold commission. First, to seek for the lost word, which he finds in a higher grade to be Jehovah, or natural religion. You want to hear that one again? Every master mason is entrusted with a twofold commission. First, to seek for the lost word, which he finds in a higher grade to be Jehovah, or natural religion. And secondly, to revenge the death of Hiram, to revenge the death of Hiram, of which the master's sign is a constant memorial, a feigned stab with the thumb. I got to do that one again, I think. Every master mason is entrusted with a twofold commission. First, to seek for the lost word, which he finds in a higher grade to be Jehovah or natural religion. And secondly, to revenge the death of Hiram, of which the master's sign is a constant memorial, a feigned stab with the thumb. In the ninth degree, now listen to this, you guys. In the ninth degree, the elected knights of the nine, a still more emphatic ceremony is observed. According to Albert Pike's Ritual of the Southern Jurisdiction of the U.S., Scottish Rite, each new entrant and eight already elected knights lay aside their Masonic clothing and jewels, and each is armed with a sword and dagger. They enter a room, which is lighted only by a single lamp set on the floor by the side of a couch of leaves on which is placed a representative of Abiram sleeping. "Here is the assassin," says the master of ceremonies. "Strike boldly at his head and heart and revenge the death of the master." The candidate does so with his dagger, a voice exclaiming, "Nikam," which is Hebrew, folks, for revenge. Is this a Christian thing going on here? Hebrew for revenge. And the master of ceremonies, having with his sword separated the bleeding head from the trunk, gives it to the candidate, who, holding it in his right hand, returns to the chapter room. So they use the Hebrew word for revenge when they go through that ritual in the ninth degree. It is in the ninth order, too, that the philosophy of goodwill and benevolence to mankind, inculcated in the lower degrees, is supplemented by an eloquent appeal to destroy ignorance, tyranny, and fanaticism. And it is interesting to notice that in this and the succeeding degrees, numerous Hebrew names and associations creep into the rituals. The following striking passage is taken from the ritual of the 11th degree, the sublime knight's Elu of the 12. The venerable master says, "My brethren, are you willing to take upon yourselves the duties of governors of Israel and chiefs over the tribute, with the resolution to discharge those duties faithfully and impartially?" And they all say, "We are governors of Israel, folks." Okay. And then the venerable master says, "Let then our chancellor write the decree, making these 12 our vice-regents, each in his province, to be obeyed accordingly." Now the next three orders are engaged in symbolic rituals dealing with the rebuilding of the Temple of Solomon, which are difficult to understand, but considerable light is thrown upon their meaning in the concluding catechism of the 15th degree, the Knights of the East, Sword or Eagle. Question: of what are the ruins of the walls of the city and the holy house an emblem? And all of them say, answer: of a country that has lost its liberties and an order ruined and proscribed. To what do the 70 lights of the lodge allude? Answer: to the 70 years of Hebrew captivity. Question: of what are the chains of the captives with their triangular links and emblem? Answer: of the three powers that have in all ages fettered the human intellect and chained the limbs of the people, the kings, priests, and nobles, of tyranny, superstition, and privilege. Oh, what do you profess? Freemasonry is the answer. What do you build? The answer: temples and tabernacles. Where? In the souls of men and among the nations. In which way do you travel? Listen to this: from Babylon to Jerusalem. I don't know about you folks, but boy, that just doesn't leave any doubt for me. It is not difficult. That's the end of that. The author here says, it is not difficult to see whither all this symbolism and catechism points. As the candidate becomes more and more initiated into the secrets and inner history of his craft, he becomes more and more familiar with the idea of liberty as a basic principle in Masonic life and thought, and to the possibility of himself having, if need be, to offer up his life in the cause of the downtrodden races and in the defense of free government. Such an ideal sounds noble enough, but let us try to find out what motive lies behind it. We have mentioned that one of the duties of a master mason in revolutionary masonry is to seek for the lost word. by the time he is fully initiated as a Rosicrucian, 18th degree, he has learned that the day, listen to this, the day on which the word Jehovah was lost is precisely that on which the Son of God died on the cross. The Abbe Barule says, quote, as soon as the candidate has proved that he understands the Masonic meaning of the inscription I-N-R-I, Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews, the Master of Ceremony explains, listen, folks, my dear brethren, the word is found again. And all present applaud the luminous discovery that he, whose death was the consummation and the grand mystery of the Christian religion, was no more than a common Jew crucified for his crimes. That's what they think of Jesus. It is on the gospel and on the Son of Man that the adept is to avenge the brethren, the Pontiffs of Jehovah. Now, who calls themselves Christian? What do they call themselves? Judeo-Christians? Ain't no such a thing, folks. It is an oxymoron. A pontiff, by the way, is a bishop or a head priest, a priest, especially a pope. So the Freemasons avenged the priests of Jehovah, the Pharisees, today's rabbis, who are responsible for the death of Jesus. The elders of Zion in their protocols also claim that their king, despot of the blood of Zion, will be the pope of the world. The Knights Templars were in the book again. The Knights Templars, 27th degree, have again and again been accused of like heretical practices, and it seems clear from the evidence that the charge of denying Christ and defiling the cross at their ceremony of initiation has been firmly established. Step by step are the initiates into the deeper secrets led to abandon belief not only in Christianity, but in all revealed religion, and by making them out-and-out materialists, the ground is prepared for the seeds of the Jacobinical code of revolution. When at length the candidate is, now listen to this, oh doggone, I'm going to redo this one again tomorrow night. Oh geez, I'm going to quit right here. This is the one, and we're going to pick this up right from here, talking about the Knights Kadash. Alright, we're out of our hour. And I hope this has been enlightening to you folks as it has been to me. As this book has been written, the research, etc., has just kind of blown my mind away. And it certainly has opened my eyes. Jewish persecution. It's on the main page there at sweetliberty.org. Thanks for being here. And we'll be back with you tomorrow night. God bless you, folks. Good night.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O.